morning, honorable members, our esteemed officials, and distinguished ladies and gentlemen. You are welcome to your own parliament. We are here to participate as people of South Africa in making South Africa a better place to live in. And one of the areas we have to look into is the situation of our refugees, the situation of our asylum seekers, and looking as to whether we are applying we are having the necessary regulations to have a control to make sure that if people say they are refugees, indeed they are refugees. If you are an asylum seeker, indeed you are an asylum seeker. This is because of problems that we have had, that some people have got into this country under the pretext of being asylum seekers or refugees, only to find that they are economic migrants. They are not asylum seekers. So it is the duty of each and every South African under the leadership of our parliament to participate in making sure that we regulate this situation. Because if we don't, we may find ourselves having unrest, having problems, and even labeled as xenophobic because of unrest that may ensue as a result of unregulated immigration under the pretext of people calling themselves refugees or asylum seekers. So briefly, that is the intention of the bill, and we have a number of submissions for which we are very grateful to receive. And the program, I think, is in front of each and every one of us. The first area was going to be establishing the chairperson. The second one, welcome and opening, which I have done. And apologies, we have apologies from Ms. Kenya and from our chairperson, Mr. B.L., Honorable B.L. Mashilo, from the IFP we have Ms. S.J. Komo, who is not too well. And then from the ANC, Mr. D.D. Kekane, Honorable D.D. Kekane, because of a bereavement. Mrs. T.E. Kenye from the ANC is a late arrival because of unavailability of flights from Islam. And then another apology is from Dr. C.P. Mender of Freedom Front Plus. Those are the apologies that we are having, and without much ado, then I shall introduce you, honorable members, to, is that an apology?
My
Okay, thank you very much. I think our secretariat will note that. Then we shall go then to presentations, and then who are we having here as our esteemed guest? That is Mr. C.A.C. Sibila Mecha, Director in Drafting. Thank you. And then Mr. Moses Malakate, Deputy Director, Drafting. Then Mr. Manda Madumisa, Director, Repatriation and Integration Management. Mr. Carl Sloth Nielsen, Chairperson, Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs. Samuel Mandiwana, Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Advocate Dion Erasmus, Deputy Director General Mr. McKay. And then the interested organizations and individuals. Firstly, we have those that are interested in refugee law, Mr. Martin Bowen, refugee law consultant. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
And Mr. Fazlin Chakut, an advocate, I suppose in refugee law. Thanks, we are honored to have you, ma'am. Then, second esteemed presenters are Scali Brini, Center of Cape Town, Ms. Miranda Matikane.
Just myself, sorry, John.
Oh, it's only calling just
me.
Okay, so Ms. Miranda Matikane and Abdulkader Mohammed are not here. Oh, Assalamu alaikum. Then we go to International Network of Congolese Lawyers, Mr. John Claude Kazaku. They are arriving late. Okay, then let us go to Center, Mr. William Kerford. Then Mr. Alexandra Chaneto and Mr. Levy. Then, who is a candidate at him? Then, State Law Advisors, Advocate Yolanda van Aswachen. Oh, yes. Then, Ms. Lairo is not here, Principal State Law Advisor. Then, from Parliament, we have Mr. Natu Chekane, Parliamentary Legal Advisor. Then we have dealt with apologies. And the first to present will be a presentation from the refugee law. We have about 20 minutes. They were supposed to start at 9:45. We are about 3 minutes late. So without much ado, let the refugee law make its presentation, and then for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then so that perhaps where we need clarification, we can then engage. So over to you, refugee law.
And go straight to the points that I believe in the bill require further attention from this committee and from the practitioners. The bill creates new exclusions provisions for people who want to apply for refugee. There are three that I'd like to focus on. The people who did not enter the country through an official port of entry, who failed to apply within 5 days of entering SA, and who are fugitives from justice. These three exclusions might be or are problematic in my view. First of all, because the issue of irregular entry raises an issue of compatibility with a scenario of flight. I think we have touched base this when the Deputy Minister presented on the bill initially a few weeks ago. But more importantly, I think that the issue of late applications raises an issue of procedural fairness. People are now supposed to apply within 5 days of entering SA. I do not believe that in the current situation, the Department of Home Affairs has got actually the resources to deal with that within 5 days. There have been numerous cases by the High Court which ruled that the procedure was unfair because people were not given the opportunity to apply within a reasonable period of time, particularly because they had to wait relentlessly at very long queues. So I think that there is an issue of fairness here, and I don't think it's practical actually to impose that short time period of 5 days out of which people would be ruled out of the asylum process. Second, as far as justice's escapees are concerned, I think that putting that kind of investigation on IRSDO is not easy because it requires an assessment of whether the person comes from a country where the rule of law is actually properly enforced. And I don't think that RSDOs have the capacity to do that on their own because it's a very complex issue, I think. And also, concerning those exclusion clauses, I haven't seen in the bill any possibility of appeal or review by the applicant. It seems, and I speak under the control of the DHA here, it seems that everything will be forwarded or may be forwarded to SCRA. Yet these are very important issues, especially the issue of being a fugitive of justice and then late applications. I'm not sure how this is going to work, and I'm not sure if it's entirely fair and if people have got the right avenues to appeal or to get a decision of exclusion either by SCRA or anybody else. So the issue of appeal is a bit of a problem to me. Moving on to the cessation of refugee status, this is an issue that applies when people have already been recognized as refugees. And the bill is introducing a number of new cessation clauses. The first one is when the person returns to his or her home country. The second one is the person re-availed himself or herself in any way to the protection of her country, which would be typically the case of, you know, getting and using a passport of the home country. A third, has committed a serious crime in South Africa. And fourth, has used a fraudulent visa, permit, or travel document. Typically, in according to international standards, when a refugee returns home, it might be shocking to some of you, but in terms of international standards, this return should be viewed on the individual merits and the circumstances of the person. Now the bill is provides like an automatic cessation clause in such an event. Once again, it's not in line with the international standards, which required an analysis of the personal circumstances of the person. Same goes with reavailment of a person to the protection of his country. It is very difficult to make it strictly automatic, as the bill wants to put it. And then when it comes to crime and the use of fraudulent documents, as morally shocking as it may sound, one must refer to the Geneva Convention, which South Africa is a party of, and the addition of new cessation clause is simply not permitted. The cessation clauses in the Geneva Convention are exhaustive, and crime and the use of fraudulent documents are simply not part of the secession clause allowed by the refugee conventions. So I'm afraid, even if you have a serial killer that is recognized as a refugee here in South Africa, tough, his status cannot be terminated for that reason, because the Geneva Conventions enumerate exhaustively the causes of cessations. Now moving on to what I believe is probably the most important change in the bill is the collective cessation of status. This is a brand new provision in the bill, in the sense that now minister is allowed to collectively revoke refugee status of a category of people. A category of people pretty much means people sharing the same citizenship. This is what happened with Angolan nationals a few years ago. I don't know exactly how it was managed, probably on an individual basis, which caused problems, which led now the bill to allow minister to decide to resolve, to use the bill's word, to resolve the cessation of a category of people, a citizenship in particular. There are three things that I'd like to say about mass revocation. Number one, typically under the Geneva Convention, the asylum process is supposed to be individualized. So mass revocation really hurts the principles of an individual assessment of refugee status. Second, I have noted that in the bill, whenever a minister decides to revoke collectively a refugee status of a category of people, SCRA has to implement it by means of a publication, by means of a notice in the Gazette. I don't think it's fair to compel SCRA to do that, because otherwise the bill simply does away with the independence of SCRA, which is quite an important component and as part of the equilibrium of the entire ecosystem. So I'm a bit skeptical about that. And most importantly, I think there is not enough, with all due respect to Minister Gigaba and his successors, I think that the single resolution of a minister to revoke the status of thousands of people in one decision is a bit of a stretch. I think there should be safeguards. If this is to be allowed, there should be safeguards in the sense that maybe a cabinet decision, as the previous bill actually catered for, or at least a consultation with the UNHCR. But a sole decision of minister in a case like this, of this magnitude, to me is problematic. It's a little bit more technical, but in terms of SCRA and the Refugee Appeal Board, I have noticed that DHA is now willing to impose a vetting investigation on SCRA and AREB members, which include the use of polygraph. And I don't think that this is the right thing to do here, because, I mean, SCRA and AREB are supposedly independent bodies. The Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs is supposed to rule without any fear or favor, quoting the law, and the Refugee Appeal Board is a jurisdiction. So using polygraph on quasi-judges, to me, makes me feel quite uncomfortable, and is certainly not in line with international standards. On top of that, the bill provides for a number of automatic rejections where SCRA or the RAB have got nothing to say. This is the case where the applications is found to contain, I quote, false, dishonest, or misleading information. In cases like that, the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs and the Refugee Appeal Board simply have to reject automatically without any discretion. So once again, it's weighing on the independence of those two bodies, and it's once again affecting the entire ecosystem where these bodies are supposed to have some independence and shouldn't be compelled to make a decision. In which case, we even wonder why the case is brought to them if they must confirm the decision taken by the Department of Home Affairs. One thing also, in terms of labour, I think that submitting the members of SCRA and the RAB to polygraph is a reverse discrimination against other DHA officials who are not actually submitted to that kind of vetting, which I believe is quite strong, to say the least. One more thing before I conclude is something that I really would like to have clarification upon. It's the interaction, the new interaction created by the bill between DHA and SCRA. It seems now that, if I read some sections of the new bill, that SCRA is entitled to, I quote, monitor and supervise all RSDO decisions, which means approve, disapprove, reject, grant asylum, grant asylum even to someone who has actually appealed a decision of rejection. And also, what is a little bit of a worry to me is the fact that within SCRA there will be a team of specifically designated by the TJ of Home Affairs official who will be dealing with this monitoring and supervision of all RSDO's decision. So, in a way, and I think clarification is really important here, it means that SCRA could, or the team within, the DHA team within SCRA could actually quash any decision granting refugee status or any decision conferring status to an asylum seeker, even though the RSDO has rejected it. So now it's kind of intertwining all the stakeholders, RSDO, SCRA, they're all intertwined, and at the end of the game, I'm wondering who is the ultimate decision maker in this. It seems that if I read the bill correctly, through this new monitoring and supervision powers attributed to SCRA, it seems that any team of DHA officials within SCRA, it seems that this new body, or newly composed body, is kind of becoming the ultimate decision maker in the asylum process, doing away with RSDO themselves, doing away with the Refugee Appeal Board, even doing away, to a certain extent, with the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. Right, now onto the work to study, I think a lot of people will have a lot of things to say about that, so I'll be very, very brief. One thing that really bothers me here is that the right to work can be refused now, it's no longer automatic, and can be refused to an asylum seeker who has been provided shelters and facilities from the UNHCR. I think this is a bit of a wishful thinking on the part of the Department of Home Affairs, because I really don't see the UNHCR helping South Africa, providing shelter. I mean, they can hardly cope in deep Africa with huge refugee problems. I really don't see them willing to assist funding or providing shelter, food, or anything else to our asylum seekers. So I think that unless Home Affairs has got a written commitment from the UNHCR in that department, I think that there might be a problem with that. Yes, conclusion, if I still have time, I think that this bill might give us the opportunity to streamline the asylum process. I think that the asylum process in South Africa is way too sophisticated for the type of influx it's dealing with. And to streamline this process, and I'm outside of the bill, but it's part of my conclusion, I think that, number one, we should do away with the distinction between unfounded and manifestly unfounded. I think it's a useless workload that is put onto Home Affairs, and simplify the process forward. And how do we simplify the process forward? We merge the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs with the Refugee Appeal Board into a single appeal body, with 3 judges for normal cases and 1 judge for cases which are manifestly unfounded, in which case you can still have the manifestly unfounded, but at a later stage. And then what I also believe is an exercise that is really not really worth the effort is the certification by SCRA that a refugee will remain a refugee indefinitely. I think this is, when someone has been in the country for a very long while, even after 10 years, you still have to verify whether that person will remain a refugee independently. I think this is, we could simplify this and simply do away with this. And once a person has been a refugee for a number of years, certification becomes like, it's a luxury that we should do away with. I want to bring to the table the fact that in this country, the asylum seekers that have been in the system for more than a decade. I mean, recently there was a truck driver coming to my house to make a delivery. He's an asylum seeker for the last 19 years on a Section 22 permit. I was just, wow. Okay, so these people, I mean, they have work, they have family, children, and everything here. So there comes a time where it has to stop. A person cannot be in a system for such a long time. So I strongly believe, and this is in line with the new paper on immigration that DHA has released, one needs to identify solutions and create some form of regularization system on a much broader scale than only for the Zimbabweans or the people from Lesotho. So there must be, there should be, in my view, a regularization scheme to allow people who have been in the pipeline for such a long time that it becomes really questionable, I mean, and then allow them in, especially if they have work, especially if they have low skills that are needed in South Africa. The green paper, is it the green or white paper? The green paper insists on that. We all know that the asylum process is used by a number of people because the Immigration Act in itself is way too complicated when it comes to low-skilled workers. The Immigration Act simply doesn't cater for low-skilled workers. So the fact that a lot of people are turning to the asylum system is a consequence of the Immigration Act being too strict. So I think we need to open the doors a little bit and allow people who have been asylum seekers for such a long time to acquire some form of regular stay in South Africa, without this regular stay having been to, you know, reassessed all the time. Otherwise, I'm not surprised that DHA is struggling with the influx of refugees or asylum seekers, because DHA has imposed on itself the permanent reassessment of places.
Yes. I'm going to talk to you about 1 minute now. Your time is over.
I'm done anyway. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, sir. The next presentation will be from Calabrini Center. But perhaps we have used the word here, international standards. If perhaps someone can expand on that. Does it include East, West Africa? Whose standard is international standard? How is it determined and so forth? Because we do not want to deal with something we don't know. It has to be what is international standard. Okay, over to you, Scalabrini.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Excuse me, sir.
Sure.
Are you not having a presentation? I think it's better to come this side.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that they can interact with you.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having us. My name is Corey Johnson. I'm an advocacy officer at the Scalabrini Center, which is a registered not-for-profit organization that perceives migration as an opportunity and has been assisting, the Scalabrini Fathers have been assisting displaced people in Cape Town since the mid-90s. And basically the comments today are based on our experience in trying to assist people navigate the asylum system. We welcome the opportunity to discuss the Refugees Amendment Bill today, and with the presentation we don't want to go through our full submission, and we're just going to focus on a few points. And of course we can take any questions about the full submission that was sent a few weeks ago. So what I'm going to try to focus on is the green paper process and how the Refugee Amendment Bill fits into that, and possible shift away from urban refugee protection, the historic challenges with implementing the Refugees Act, and the capacity of Home Affairs to implement such proposals. And then my colleague here, Abdi Qadir Mohammed from the Somali Association, will also give a brief presentation, so we'll be within 10 minutes each. At the outset, were concerned that the proposed amendments to the Refugees Act represent a significant shift away from the urban refugee protection framework as established under the Refugees Act. And in line with this, the most concerning move is the move towards providing shelter and support to asylum seekers through UNHCR, as well as friends and family, as opposed to asylum seekers being able to support themselves independently. The proposal has not been elaborated on in full, despite the significant implications for both refugee protection and society more generally, and we would definitely welcome more elaboration from the departments on that, as well as UNHCR. And as far as the green paper process goes, it's our belief that such drastic changes should be involved in the larger policy development process that's currently ongoing through the green paper. That was published for comment earlier this year, and comments were submitted in September. And that green paper process seeks to inform the larger migration policy going forward, to come up with a white paper to base the migration policy off of. And in line with that, we think that a lot of the Refugees Amendment Bill proposals should be shelved and wait for the green paper process to be finalized. Regarding the implementation of the Refugees Act, as noted in our submission, it's our view that the primary challenge of the refugee protection system since it went into force has been one of implementation. The urban refugee protection system in South Africa has been championed towards progressive provisions, which allow asylum seekers and refugees to lead meaningful lives and contribute to society, and just as importantly, does not rely heavily on the South African state for the provision of shelter and support. Of course, there's been challenges with the Refugees Act, and one of the main ones has been the protracted nature of the adjudication process, which was mentioned earlier. The first instance decisions on refugee status are quite low in quality. They consistently contain serious errors of law. They disregard country of origin information and the individual applicant's circumstances. They contain generic copy and paste sections, and they fail to meet the standards of administrative and procedural fairness. These errors, in turn, affect all asylum seekers, including those from such places as Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Somalia, as well as the most vulnerable, including disabled and unaccompanied minors. The decisions rendered by refugee status determination officers are so poor they cannot be reviewed by the Refugee Appeal Board, and instead must be reached de novo. And all of this just adds significantly to the review process through the Refugee Appeal Board and the Standing Committee. And one of the principal kind of obstacles or blockages right now in the system is the Refugee Appeal Board. And over the last few years, we've only managed to have 5 asylum seekers have their refugee appeal heard. Those 5 still haven't received decisions, but in a 2-year period, it's only 5. So it's very difficult for somebody who gets rejected as unfounded to be able to go through the full process and have a fair hearing at the Refugee Appeal Board. So, I mean, we're very concerned about that process, and we hope that the committee can pay specific attention to the appeals process. The protracted nature of the adjudication process it leads to people being stuck as asylum seekers for extended periods of time. And instead of getting refugee status within a reasonable amount of time, they often have to wait a number of years. This, of course, requires repeated trips to the refugee reception office, and it adds to the administrative burden on the department, and it's also extremely difficult for the asylum seeker, who often has limited resources, to continually report for permit renewals. In Cape Town, the closure of the Cape Town Refugee Reception Office now requires that many asylum seekers resident here have to travel long distances to their office of application, be it Mucina, Pretoria, or Durban, and they're going to have to do that repeatedly, especially those people on appeal as they wait for the appeal process to finalize. The department has indicated at various times that the time frame for adjudication of asylum applications has been reduced, and that's good news, but unfortunately we still see a lot of people who have to wait a number of years, and these are deserving applicants from countries such as Somalia, Burundi, and I think that's our primary concern, is if we can't fix the processes within the refugee status determination regime, that we're going to have a lot of the same problems going forward. Lastly, I'll just discuss what we kind of see might be problems implementing some of the proposals in the amendment bill. It seems that some of the proposals will add extra work to RSDOs and also to the standing committee, but that extra work won't go towards determining who is a legitimate refugee or who isn't. So instead, the proposals will be adding work, but we won't be getting to the primary goal of determining who's a refugee or not. For example, the proposed amendments regarding the 5-day requirement to apply for asylum and the provisions for irregular entry, those will add unnecessary determination processes to the system. And of course, those don't relate to refugee protection. But they do pose a great risk to genuine refugees who then have to go through that process. Also, the proposed amendment surrounding the sustainability determination process, that's the amendment that will try to determine who can work and who can receive assistance from UNHCR or friends or family. We think that this really needs to be clarified, but that as it's written now, it's hard to see how it could be implemented both practically and also in a fair manner, because it's just so vague on what can be sustained, how much UNHCR can give to a person, etc. So just to conclude, and in consideration of the above, it's our submission that instead of introducing these amendments that contain unnecessary and awkward processes to the asylum application process, the department would benefit more, both in terms of refugee protection and cost, by committing to the strengthening of the refugee status determination process. And until this fundamental issue is addressed, we think the asylum system is unlikely to function as envisioned. And so we hope due consideration will be given to the above as you deliberate over the Refugees Amendment Bill. Thanks.
Good morning. I would like to
good morning, sir. You would have about 7 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. After closely studying the Refugee Amendments Bill, which was published in Government Gazette of the 12th of October 2015, Somali Association has a concern with the following. I'll just make it very short because my time is very short. The definition of dependent. Dependent was given a narrow definition in the Refugee Amendment Bill by the Movement Institute, aged or infirm members of the immediate family as dependent to include only destitute, aged or infirm parents. Looking at the cultural background of most refugee families through conflict, an extended family is a key component of the protection of family unity and aligns with Article 18 of the African Charter of Human Rights, which states the aged and the disabled should also have the right to special measures of protection. I'll just give an example of this in reference to children who are not the biological children of these parents. For example, if the brother-in-law passes away and you are responsible of the children of that brother-in-law, obviously you'll be the one who will be taking care of that children and you are not the immediate family. So it will be a problem if that law is used against that family. Number two, the bill proposes an insertion into Section 2 into 1A, requiring that asylum seekers must make applications within 5 days of entry into the Republic. The bill further says, unless the refugee provides a compelling reason, including hospitalization, or institutional problem, we believe this requirement is impractical and unreasonable, given the realities of an asylum system, which includes capacity constraints and limited facilities for individuals to lodge applications. There are also schedules for different nationalities, and if you are supposed to come on Friday as a nationality and you don't get into the queue and being able to be served, that means you fall behind shelter. So that's going to really block the way for so many asylum seekers. And coming into the country also, as an asylum seeker, you really don't know what are the laws of the country, and you might fall behind the schedule as well. And those who cannot read and write, it will also be a very big disadvantage for them, and they will be marginalized. Number three, the bill also makes provision for the abandonment of claims through sections 22, 12, and 13. Sata believes these amendments are harsh and do not take into consideration the current access problems at RROs, the difficulty asylum seekers have in accessing expired permit processes, the long queues, and capacity issues. The bill does not also consider the poor, disabled, pregnant, and vulnerable groups. There are so many pregnant women, disabled people who travel long distances to Pretoria and Musina, and that was not considered because they have families here in Cape Town and they cannot live in Pretoria in that area. Number four, the amendment of Section 22 of the Principal Act seeks to introduce provisions for the determination of an asylum seeker's ability to work while awaiting final adjudication. SASA believes this section is unworkable and will lead to the degradation of asylum seekers' dignity if implemented, and we strongly urge the Department of Home Affairs to consider this seriously. This provision will also create a huge administrative burden on the Department of Home Affairs over a condition which basic survival needs are dependent upon. As you all know, there are so many asylum seekers who support themselves and their dependents, and even further create jobs to support South African families. We therefore believe the ethos of self-reliance be rather promoted than being discouraged. I'm not sure, Mr. Chairperson, how many more minutes I have, but for that few points.
Three minutes.
So I have time to talk now. Coming from the point of being a refugee myself for the last 14 years in South Africa, which I really appreciate how I was accepted in South Africa as a refugee and lived in the country, considering the fact that in many minds of refugees and asylum seekers that South Africa is one of the best countries that have upheld human rights values and respect human rights, but putting in parallel with the new refugee amendments bill, I fear that's not going to be the situation, and that's not going to be the thing that we are going to have in our minds as refugees and asylum seekers. And looking into the woes that are happening all around the world, the refugee crisis all over the world, I don't really believe UNHCR has the capacity to give shelter and food to refugees and asylum seekers. And I believe the situation in the camps, in the detention camps, I don't call it detention camps, but I think you call it processing camps for people to be processed there. I think it will be a very serious, it will have a very serious impact on refugees and asylum seekers. Considering the situation of asylum seekers at the moment, especially the people who are on appeal for more than 10 years, I'm sure so many lawyers have spoken about that. I'm not a lawyer and I don't come from a legal background. I just come from an experienced background of being a refugee in the country myself. I'll conclude and say we urge the Department of Home Affairs to really look into all these issues that are really serious, and we really appreciate if steps are taken to really look into all these issues. I thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. And we really sympathize with refugees, genuine refugees, asylum seekers, as South Africans. But as South Africans as well, we've got to take the voice of the South African citizen into account. I think now the exercise is around those two. Looking at the situation of the refugee and the asylum seeker on one side, but at the same time, looking at the voice of the ordinary South African on the other. But thank you very much. We really value your contribution, gentlemen. And then let me go to the next area, which is questions, comments, and discussions. Honorable Hossein.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Allow me the opportunity to respond to the very last comment that you made by saying that I don't disagree with you that we must balance it with the voice of ordinary South Africans. But equally so, we have a responsibility to provide leadership. Because if you listen to the voice of South Africans during the xenophobic attacks, you'll come to a different conclusion. And that's why it's important for us, as parliamentarians, to provide the kind of leadership that's required in this situation. I completely agree with the comments of the gentleman who himself is a refugee about our reputation and respect for human rights. And that, I think, is something that all of us as South Africans should be proud of. And what we must be doing is to be striving for something that strengthens those values in our laws and not eradicate it. So my own view, until we get an opportunity to engage quite deeply on the bill, is that there are a number of aspects in the bill that actually seek to erode those very basic fundamental principles. And it's something that we'll have an opportunity to discuss and debate after the public hearings, but I wanted to make that point. So strongly I feel about it that I think that maybe perhaps Donald Trump himself has written this bill. Because some of the things that's in here is actually very consistent with some of the comments that he has been making of recent. But nonetheless, Chair, I have only just one question, and that is presenter Martin Stubbs. And he made reference to the period of 5 days, which I agree that I think is unreasonable, but I'd like to hear what his views are on what he thinks would be a reasonable period of time to allow people to apply. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, Chair. Let us do this. Let members ask questions and give comments, and then respond in your area of competence. I think that one is going to be better off. Otherwise, we are going to find it very difficult to manage time. Let us just have all questions first, and then different responses. And I think in some areas, the department has got to respond as well. Honorable Dr. Maisela.
Thank you, Chair. I think so far nobody says that asylum seekers have been treated badly in South Africa. And the gentleman said that everything that has been happening so far, everybody is happy with. But the world changed, and things change, nothing is static. And I think if we do not refine our asylum laws, then we will have chaos take over. I think the amendments here are meant to refine what has been best. It is best so far. And you can't refine the best thing better than the best. So we are merely trying to make it easier and more commensurate with our laws that we have to catch up with what is developing. You can't say if we say people must report within 5 days. I mean, if you enter correctly with a passport and you know where you're going, within 5 days you will have reported at the Home Affairs. In fact, at the port of entry, you are noted. But if you sneak in and say you will go in after some time, maybe 10, 5 years, or what is reasonable time here? I mean, these are meant to help the refugee or the asylum seeker to say, oh, you've entered at point A, you've been recorded, and you are known, you are here, and please, within a reasonable time, go to Home Affairs and regularize yourself. I mean, that's reasonable enough. And we don't say we take you to a refugee camp where you can stay forever. You know what is happening in Calais, you know what's happening in Europe, and things like that. We're merely trying to preempt that chaos that will overtake refugee seekers in our country by doing it in an orderly manner, in a predictable manner, in a regulated manner, in a manner that is rigid. I'm sure when you come, a refugee comes here, he hasn't gotten the legal advice on what the laws you are going to have and what and all sorts of things. You don't come with a document and say, okay, I have to report within 5 days, I have to go to this, I have to go enter here and so on and so on. But when you know that you are going to ask for protection, you go to the protectors. You don't sit around and say, maybe one day when they catch up with me, I'll say I'm looking for asylum. I think the law as it is good enough, and the amendments are good enough to make sure that it's workable and there is no chaos. In fact, it's in the interest of the refugee seekers themselves. We don't say we don't want them. We say we welcome them, but they must comply. And all we need is for them to comply, and that's it. They stay in the country, they are welcome. Okay, there may be homophobia here, which is exaggerated, but that is fighting for turf. But the government protects people, they don't throw them out. And I think the Scalabrini Foundation actually hunt for those people and look for them and make sure that they are well looked after. Okay? So you are doing well, and we appreciate that. At least you are an objective referee. But I don't think you say, no, this one is going to make our work difficult, or it's going to help you make your work easier. You know where to find them, how to help them. So I think maybe we are just bringing a phobia of the unknown here. So let us wait until we can have objective facts about what we are trying to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Then Honorable Ndaba, then after Honorable Ndaba is Honorable Sophie Mkhalibi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think my question will be based on the first presentation that was made with regards to CRA and RA independence. What's the submission that is presented to us with regards to the use of polygraphy in consent with the international standards. But I just want to check with the person who was making presentation that is it not correct that the country, the department is proposing a polygraphy in instances where they suspect that maybe there is a need. Because it says it says the department may impose a vetting investigation on CRA and RAB members, which include the use of polygraphy in line with National Strategic Intelligence Act 2A. So I'm saying, is it correct for people to come in our country misrepresenting facts and not giving us accurate information? Because it's not correct. And your statement of saying it's against the international standards, I think what you have said is not helping us. Because for us or any person out there who doesn't know what are those international standards that you are talking about, it's like it's a statement which it does not empower anybody. So I wish you could elaborate further on what exactly do you mean when you talk of international standards. Thank you.
Yeah, surely it's not Western standards. I am Khalifi.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks for popularizing my username. Although I have not changed it, I don't know if Home Affairs would agree. No, thanks for both the presentation from Refugee Law and from Scalabrini Center of Cape Town. I think most of the points that you are raising, as yet, I concur with you. From the onset, we have also mentioned to the committee that there is no way that the AFF can support such bill because we feel that it's undemocratic and it's counter-revolutionary. But we are in this process, we have to engage and get opinion from all parties that are interested. So So, as you correctly, Mr. Martin, stated that 5 days is unfair in the department and does not have sufficient resources. Maybe just to get your understanding or your submission, how many days would be sufficient in terms of being financed? I'm not saying these 5 days, I agree with you, is harsh, it's unfair, and there are so many reasons that I can motivate. But for now, I just want to get your submission in terms of how many days there could be enough for those people to be given. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. You know, looking at this refugee deal, last week in another committee, the International Relations Committee, we were visited by young Chinese diplomats. I think they were about 20. And they were visiting Africa, and one asked a question. They came from, I think they visited Ethiopia, and they were coming here in South Africa. He said, you know, when I was looking at the borders from Ethiopia to Cape Town, it is a straight line. Why? You know, going back to my fellow brother there, when he really praised South Africa about really upholding the human rights, and I think when this bill is coming into force, it's actually trying to concretize and even to assist upholding more and more the human rights. So thank you for that, and thank you for saying that. We really appreciate that. But on the issue of Mr. Martin, as a person who is more vested and who really upholds the human rights and even the law, and I cannot really understand when you are saying that the polygraph is not consistent. Why should a person come to South Africa seeking refuge and that person lies? And after that, we should also protect that person. It shows really, this person is untrustworthy. And it's a big hindrance into our security. So why should we bring a group of liars? Are they going to contribute to the development of our country? Or are they still going to solve those conflict and instability? I'm asking the person who knows better, you know, on the issues of law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nathan.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My Chair is a clarification question. Chair, I think this Geneva Convention should be revisited. As South Africa, there are so many conventions and signatures. merit to whom country should be judged on individual merit or the competencies. Maybe if you can clarify and elaborate on that. Because to me, if you go back home for a visit, it's safe, warm and welcoming. You can't go, come back, visit. So that is a sign that there's nothing wrong. You can simply go and come back. So when you say it must be just by merit and circumstances, I really don't understand. Maybe you can clarify.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you,
very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Just want a clarity on the issue that Mr. Martin has talked about in polygraph. Is that to the staff or to the refugees? Because why I'm asking, there is a lot of corruption happening within the Home Affairs. Now, corruption doesn't take one person. It goes down to 5 or 10 people. Maybe that's why you're talking about that photograph. The other issue, Chairperson, you recall that I've asked at 5 days, and they say when somebody enters the port of entry, within 5 days you must register. Now, my concern was, what happens if it's 20,000 people or 5,000 people? I'm just making an example. How are they going to register within 5 days? Firstly, that person must get accommodation. Secondly, maybe doesn't have means of money for traveling. Now, when the 5 days expire, what is going to happen to that person? Lastly, Chairperson, I know I've asked Home Affairs how do they have enough staff to deal with the issues. Then I think the same department told us that they've got 16 people, especially with the PR. If you apply for the PR, it takes them endless, like 5 years or 3 years. I have a lot of people that are still waiting. They applied for 4 years. It's over 4 years already, but there is no reply. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think before I allow the presenter to respond, I'd like the department to clarify areas perhaps that have been identified by the different presenters as problematic.
Just regard to the vetting, and what I can indicate there, that is only with regard to the staff of the Refugee Appeals Board, as well as the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs and other officials that are also involved in decision making at the Refugee Reception Offices.
Okay, perhaps then the DHA organize themselves whilst the presenters respond to the issues. If perhaps it would assist if as international standards, for instance, you talk about the United Nations, or you talk about a multi-state forum. Because now you just say it as international standards. Really, unfair to us. Just come to say, United Nations, this organization, Geneva Convention, that time. So that we can zoom into that area and perhaps adjust. Please, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I certainly didn't mean any disrespect. mistakes by mentioning the world international standards, because I've been involved in refugee law in various countries, and I think that I was using past experience in that regard. As to the issue of the 5 days, in terms of international standards per se, 5 days is not necessarily problematic. There are many countries which actually require asylum seekers to apply within 5 days after entry. So this is not, in terms of international standards, not shocking to me. What is problematic, in my view, in this case, is that the time period has to be consistent with the capacity of the department to deal with the influx. So if the period of time to apply is very short, then a lot of people will be excluded or will have to explain why they couldn't apply within 5 days, which once again increases the workload of Home Affairs in a way I believe is not necessary. It's difficult to speak on behalf of Home Affairs, but the way from the top, I think that, you know, creating a debate on that when there are relentless queues outside Home Affairs every day, people trying to sort out their documents or even to apply, I think that 5 days will create more problems than it will solve. So if I were to give a number that is consistent with Home Affairs without really knowing their resources, I would say it should range between 15 and 30 days in my view. But that's my humble opinion, and Home Affairs certainly has its view on that. But that criteria of 5 days for me is going to create extra debate. Why are you late? Why this? Why that? And then what happens? You know, the asylum process in South Africa, in terms of international standards, Chair, is, I would say, way too generous in a way. Well, I don't want to offend anyone here. Maybe my words are poorly chosen, but it's very, very sophisticated. So it's got nothing to be ashamed of in terms of what happens in other countries. It is sophisticated to an extreme that it could end up paralyzing itself. Okay, that's on the 5 days. As far as the polygraph, let us be clear, the polygraph is not intended to be imposed on asylum seekers by the bill. It's intended to, it's targeting Home Affairs officials, which I believe they're perfectly entitled to do, and they can submit their staff to polygraph should they feel there is a need for it. I'm a bit more reserved when it comes to members of quasi-jurisdictions, such as the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs, which is by law supposed to act without fear and privilege. And I'm also a little bit more skeptical when it comes to the Refugee Appeal Board, which is a quasi-jurisdiction. I don't know if we've got any representative here, but the Refugee Appeal Board is kind of a court. So in terms here of international standards, I'm not aware of any country. And also in terms of fairness, I would say, simply in terms of fairness, if you don't want to refer to what happens in different places, I think that I feel very, very, I find it difficult to understand. I'm struggling with the fact that judges or quasi-judges could be submitted to polygraph. I mean, it doesn't make much sense for me. It's like saying that all MPs now are going to be submitted to polygraph to maybe it's a poor image, but how far do you go? I mean, I think that when you create a jurisdiction or a quasi-jurisdiction, such as CRA or Refugee Appeal Board, I mean, you have to trust the people for to a certain extent. And you can't vet them with a polygraph, which is very intrusive, and it's, to me, inconsistent with the nature of these bodies, which are quasi-jurisdictional. Okay, and the third issue raised by one of the member is the Geneva Convention. I think this is a fundamental question, although I advocate refugee law. But the issue is, and there are two questions in the member's intervention, is whether South Africa should remain a member of the Geneva Convention. Now, we have had precedent not so long ago with South Africa withdrawing from the Statutes of Rome, from the International Criminal Court. So it's a similar issue here. The end game is the same. Do we still want to do that as a country? So it's a matter of politics. It's an international moral issue. Do we want as a country to be part of the Geneva Convention, or is it going to is it going to throw a poor image on the country? I think that's the end game here. I think there are other ways that could be implemented. The green paper in terms of low skills is very interesting because it's opening the door for low skills permits. Because we know that a number of people, and I'm trying to be as objective as I can, although I like to defend refugee and asylum seekers, I try to be as objective as I can. We know for a fact and that a number of people who are using the asylum system are, well, shouldn't be there. They should be applying for low skills permits instead of asylum. Let's be straightforward. They should be doing that. So in that context, do we still want to adhere to the Geneva Convention when only, according to OFA statistics, 4% of the people qualify for refugee status, according to the Geneva Convention? So this is an issue. I don't know if this is the proper forum to discuss whether South Africa should remain a member of the Geneva Convention, but it is indeed a question that needs to be raised, because this Geneva Convention is imposing a very tough burden on Home Affairs for a tiny minority of people at the end of the day, and which could actually, which would be much better off within the confines of the Immigration Act with low skills permit. But that's a political decision overall. And, well, I'm refugee law, I'm not refugee politics, but this is my view about this thing. In terms of the last question by an honorable member, returning home, in most cases, the fact that a refugee, when a refugee returns home, in most cases, it leads to the withdrawal of the refugee status according to international standards. Once again, maybe you don't like the expression, but most countries, I certainly don't mean any disrespect. Most countries, when they notice that someone has a refugee, a recognized refugee, has returned home, the status is withdrawn. But it is done on an individual assessment. I mean, the problem that I have here in this case is that the withdrawal is automatic. When status must be withdrawn, it must be withdrawn according to the same way it was granted individually. So I'm not shocked if a status is withdrawn because someone went back home, but it must be assessed. So the UNHCR handbook for refugee, which has become kind of soft law with the High Court in South Africa, the handbook says that there are cases, limited cases, where the fact of returning home should not lead to the withdrawal of status. There are two examples given by the handbook, the UNHCR handbook, is when the person attends a funeral or is going back to his or her own country to get a document, like a divorce document, a divorce paper, that was not available in any other way. These were the two examples that were tolerated as not leading to the withdrawal of the status. What I'm saying here is that I'm not saying that it shouldn't, that the status should never be withdrawn in case of return, but the withdrawal should be assessed individually and shouldn't be automatic, as contrary as to what the bill says. Thank you.
Anything from Fabrini?
No. Sure. Well, I guess just to discuss the 5-day limit, I agree it definitely depends on the capacity of the departments, and maybe 5 days would be appropriate if access is easy at refugee reception offices, if they're geographically situated where somebody would be able to get from where they enter the port of entry to that office and apply within 5 days. But at the moment, I don't think it's really possible or practical. As an example, we had a gentleman from Burundi who entered the country through Namibia. He went through the port of entry, he was given a transit permit to report to Cape Town to apply for asylum. And this was about, 6 or 7 months ago. He came through, but the Cape Town offices have been closed to new applications since 2012. He arrives here, he's already spent a few days getting from that border to here. Now he's got to get
to Pretoria, Durban, or Messina, a considerable distance, minimal resources. Needless to say, he wouldn't have made it within the 5 days. And I think there's a lot of examples like that, even people entering through Messina. Given that the refugee office accepts applications for certain nationals on a certain day, so Somalis are to report on a Friday or something along those lines, that gives you one opportunity to be within the 5 days. And given the queues and the access issues, technical difficulties with the asylum system, that can be problematic. As far as what is a reasonable limit, I'm also not sure. I think I would go higher than 30 days, maybe 3 months or 6 months. But something that just came to my mind is perhaps the standing committee is best positioned to know the capacity of Home Affairs and to make a well-informed decision on what that is. And maybe it might fluctuate also. I don't know. That's just an idea.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to speak. We will, of course, look at the comments that were made, and I'm sure we will be able to make a formal response to the comments to the committee. But I think I just want to comment on the issue of capacity. I do not see how the 5 days can be linked to the capacity of the department to process, Chairperson. What we are saying here is that as soon as people get into the country, they must report to a refugee reception center where they can declare their intention to apply for asylum in South Africa. It is in terms of the Act, the Immigration Act, it gives them five days to do that. Most of our refugees or asylum seekers, Chairperson, comes through our northern borders, which we have explained when we brought the first time when we brought this issue. And it's also not when we brought the amendment to the committee, that when they come through our northern borders, they are given 5 days to go to the nearest. Most of them, the majority of them, come through either through Ibombo or they come through Bybridge. There is a center right in Messina where people can apply. We will be opening a center near the Ibombo border, the northern in Mpumalanga. It will be enough time for a person to be able to go and apply at those particular centers. There will be cases, Chairperson, where the people will use other ports of entry, like for instance the port of entry that the gentleman from Scalabrini mentioned. There are very few cases in those, and those would be the exceptions, of course. When a person gets to a center, he would be able to give adequate reason why he could not apply within that particular period of 5 days. And of course it would be accepted that he can come in from a port of entry which is really far from another center. With regard to capacity, Chairperson, the first instance where we do have a clog in the system or where we are hemorrhaging is not the processing of asylum seekers, first time asylum. It is at the point of where a failed asylum seeker is now applying for or appealing or his case has to be reviewed. So in terms of the capacity of the Department of Home Affairs to process first time applicants for asylum, I think we do have, the department does have the capacity to do that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Martin. Before we get to the next presentation, which will be from International Network of Congolese Lawyers, and thereafter we'll be having a presentation by the Legal Resources Center. But perhaps let us go to the issue of candidate President Trump.
it is, we respect every duly and democratically elected president in any country, including President Trump. We may disagree with him, there's something different, and I'm sure that we agree with him in some other areas. But we cannot afford to talk in the same way as the governing party about a candidate president of such a powerful country. We respect him, whether we agree with him or not, but we respect candidate President Trump. Over to you, international network.
One or two things from the law.
What do you mean, doctor?
You know, international standards are set by South Africa. I think our standards are the best in the world. I don't know what talking about international standards when we are setting the standards, that the international community should be following our standards. You know, unless our standards are not international, they are only international when they are Eurocentric or when they are from some other countries. And I think our standards are international or even above the international norms. So it pains us to think that the only standard of treating asylum seekers is the Calais standard or the Mexican standard where we are going to build walls and make them pay for coming to the other country. The standard is human standard, not international standard. Ours are the most humane standards that you can find in any country in the world. So maybe if you were saying the world should copy South African standards, I would agree with you. But maybe we don't understand what is this international, what does it mean? Whether South Africa is not part of the international norms. And as for the Geneva Conference or Geneva Convention, we know much more about them. Because we understood what they mean practically. We are not just objective, yeah? I mean subjective, we are objective. We understand exactly what Geneva Convention has meant to us and to everybody of us. So if we read books about them and start talking about them subjectively, then it's something different. But we who lived under the Geneva Convention standards and things like that, we understand practically. That's why in our rules and regulations and laws, we apply them, even make sure that we better them than what they are because we suffered under them. So please, let us not just want to rest the objective and say, what are the problems of asylum seekers? How do we solve them? How do we make them even better? And not come with hypothetical object, subjective speeches. It's not fair on us, and it's not fair on everybody. So please,
we'll get an opportunity. South Africa is in dialogue, and it's interesting. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair, and thank you, everyone, for the opportunity that has been rushing and running as now I'm just coming from Johannesburg. And it was a really great honor to be among in a bit of the parliament a concern as Congolese. I mean, when I'm saying international network of Congolese lawyers, it sounds a little bit weird, but that is the case, and we are most of us refugees, first of all, and we'd like to bring our contribution to the bill. We'll be having the content of the presentation, its first overview and the purpose of the bill, as you may know. It proposed vision and principles, and then we have political ideas and proposals we end up with way forward.
Okay, so up to 25:11.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Parliament procedure, as you may know, a motion is a proposal to do something better. The wording of such a proposal could be changed using motion to amend, but amendment can remove word, head word, or change word in motion. I mean, this is just a bit of refreshment to understand our background. To say from this amendment, the refugee amendment, which will come the better for us, I mean, Congolese. However, an amendment of an amendment is not allowed. I don't know if you can see that. I'd like to underline it to say, however, an amendment to an amendment of an amendment is not allowed. You'll understand this when I get to the right to education and right to work for asylum seekers. As to say, how did people got to that level of being allowed to work and be allowed to send people to educate themselves, to further study, of which from this proposal, I mean from this bill, it's very clear that the department would like to take over and then to stop this happening for many of them. It came back and trying to define what was it, a refugee. And from the Refugee Amendment Bill of 2015, many things were proposed, but at this time around in 2016, the term itself, refugees, is being questioned, and maybe they're trying to define it. According to the South African context, maybe, I got it right, before the government engaged in the international way. But applying for an asylum seeker as a visa, for us it was too well, because one needs to prepare itself for itself to go and apply to become a refugee. For us, that is very helpful. A visa or a permit in this case, we don't understand. Do you ask refugees, people on the run, people abandon everything and property to prepare themselves to come and apply for refugee visa? Question mark, we are questioning ourselves. And then there is a problem of secession of status. I mean, there are many of us, for example, we have been using this asylum seeker or refugee status for quite a long. And then it's the case for many of the Congolese people that I may know, who they'll be holding this permit for even 7 years without getting to be accepted or to be rejected. It's depending. You were asking about the dependent. Dependent, I was asking, can a son or daughter of an asylum seeker be qualified straight away, a refugee also? Or it was only the parent who were really refugees? And then when we are trying to restrict the term dependent on this amendment, I'm questioning myself what will be the outcome, especially knowing that many of them, foreign nationals, are having now families or are having kids as the majority in South Africa. But still, they are not yet identified. Refugee camps and place of detention. I mean, from all grounds of the legal framework, I mean, international or back home, I don't see myself the right to apply for asylum being a criminal offense. And then when we think of detention of people, what does it mean and where are we going? Visa, as I was trying to explain, it comes like a conditional authorization granted by a country, typically to a foreign national, to enter and temporarily remain within or to leave that country. There is too much discrimination about this, and therefore stigmatization of foreign nationals. Where are the human rights side of it? I mean, the fairness, if you can understand. Holding this A4 paper as my ID, it's called names and everything, you know, it says everything. So the delay and the removal of the right to apply for the permanent residence to asylum seekers and refugees on the ground of years spent, it's alluded and restricted from the amendment. And we're asking ourselves, what about the backlog? What about the corruption that is happening, that we are all aware, as one of the colleagues was trying to talk about. So we'd love to propose to say, in order of priority, maybe we should look and focus on the backlog and transitional provision from the bill moving forward. When I'm talking about the transition provision of the bill, I'm thinking of people staying in South Africa for quite a long, and then they don't know whether they have been granted status or they have been rejected. And then this comes, the amendment bill, and all the acts to be implemented. What will be happening? I mean, ID is a very important document, should it be for nationals, but also for refugees and migrants, because it dignifies someone. It's secure and recognizes that person as a human being. And then, therefore, would apply to say, if it may be possible for them to have a dignified document that can be recognized all over the world, that so, and identify that. So, I mean, we are from Congo, and as I was trying to teach you before, look here, I am trying to speak English and trying to defend human rights. I think looking at the bill and looking at the regional education, I think it can help in the field on how dealing with people from other countries, under SADC, for example. The right to work and to study were acquired very strongly, and you know the story. As I was trying to say, the amendment to an amendment to an amendment is not allowed, if you can think of it. Yes. And the last word is to say, maybe we should look at the labor development. I mean, in 2015, when there was tensions of on xenophobia and dissent, we were asking ourselves whether was it really the refugee law or the immigration law being the problem in the case. But we came back to say, in the context of our coast and country, South Africa, the scarce resources vis-a-vis of the flux of people coming to the country. I think that was the problem. Not the refugee or the framework, legal framework on refugee law is the problem. Therefore, maybe the department and the government should look at this and say, how can we deal with these people in terms of labor issues, the flux, and the people inside? Because, like it or not, it's education, it's labor, I mean work, and it's health, that refugees and foreign nationals are coming to bring a burden on the shoulders of the government. Can we redefine the terms and conditions that we can see other people coming from development or for work or for, to contribute to the country, then being a burden? And then the capacity of the department in terms of dealing of the delay and the backlog, I think it's a priority for us, instead of building camps, instead of building a detention center, where refugees and asylum seekers were criminals. I think that's one, and thank you. We are dreaming of the Africa united. We are dreaming of Africa where a communist can come and contribute, not feel and being stigmatized as a, because that's foreigner. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I say thank you, I say Dandi, I say Diabulela, I say Kaliboha, I say Kaliboha, I say Inkomo, I say Inkomo, and I say gracias, I say shukran, I say merci, I say obrigado. And to say we are grateful being in South Africa, of which we are not trying to deny your hospitality and the wounds too, as we are trying to be part of the workforce and contribute. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, let me hand up by saying no. thank you, esteemed gentlemen. And we have to really go on talking. And I suppose some of the problems would escalate to the AU as soon as things get better there. For now, really, we've got to deal with the problems we are having. We are trying hard. And together, I think, ultimately, we are going to have a better solution. But thank you very much for your input in trying to build our country. So next is a presentation by the Legal Resources Center, after which we shall break and have thereafter questions, thereafter the portfolio committee will be looking at the outstanding minutes. So at that time it will be in committee. So thank you very much. We really value your contribution there. Then over to the Legal Resources Center.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable members, officials and distinguished guests, thank you very much for this opportunity to address you. Just very briefly, the Legal Resources Centre is an NGO. Mandate is for the poor and disadvantaged and discriminated against people and communities in the country. We have been in existence since 1979 and we have been working on refugee and asylum issues, among many others, since 1996-97. So I hope our submission has been of some assistance to the committee. Chairperson, I respectfully suggest that this House and the Department approach the matter in the spirit of the Constitution, of the Freedom Charter, of the Organization of African Unity Convention, and the international instruments by which we are bound. Chairperson, the apartheid government rejected international standards. We should not reject international standards. We are part of Africa, we are part of the world, and we should behave accordingly. I agree respectfully with the doctor. We have got the best constitution in the world. We are world leaders. We must live up to those standards. We are bound by the Geneva Convention. We are bound by the Organization of African Unity Convention. We acceded to it in 1995. It was one of the first and best things we did. The Organization of African Unity Convention is the author, because we accepted it wholeheartedly. Section 3B of the Refugees Act, which is an excellent act, is entirely the wording of the Organization of African Unity Convention. We are not kowtowing to the West in this matter. We need to do what is right for the country, for asylum seekers, and for refugees. Chairperson, before I go on to the issues, the one issue I do wish to address immediately is this five-day matter. A person does not become a non-refugee because he or she has failed to report or be accepted by a refugee reception office within 5 days. We are bound by the immutable principle of non-refoulement. So a person claiming to be a refugee cannot be returned to his or her country of origin if he or she is likely to be tortured or otherwise harmed or executed. So I accept that there is an administrative problem relating to late applications, but one must then look at some other kind of sanction. One must above all look at reasonable circumstances. And with respect, I take issue with some of the things that have been said today about access to these refugee reception offices. The person in charge of Durban, which is an efficient and well-run office, is unable to deal with a multitude of applications until December. We sent a woman went to try and have her permit sorted out in Durban. Quite recently, she had a very young baby. She got sent away. She cannot be helped until December. The problems with access at the Pretoria office are notorious. I don't wish anyone to take offence. It is a matter of fact. People today have repeatedly said what corruption there is in the departments. The Deputy Minister, in the negotiation we've been involved in over this past week, has reiterated how terrible the issue of corruption is. What happens is you have security guards who will not assist people unless their hands palms are greased. You have officials as well. You cannot, by any stretch of the imagination, impose this five-day limit. And you certainly cannot deny a person asylum status if on the grounds of not pitching up. It would be better if there were if there was more assistance available to ensure that people are able to comply within a reasonable period. But the period itself cannot determine whether or not a person is a refugee. And in that respect, quite apart from everything else, I refer the House to the Supreme Court of Appeal case of Bula. It's quite a recent case. It said that if you find someone in the street and want to arrest him for being illegal, if he or she says, "I wish to apply for asylum," then he or she should be given 14 days. That's the Supreme Court of Appeal. But what they didn't deal with is to say, you know, that person is automatically not a refugee. That cannot be the case. Chairperson, the other, I respectfully associate myself and the Legal Resources Centre with the submissions by Scalabrini and by Ms. Bowen's in almost every respect, so I will not duplicate things. What is of grave concern to us is whether or not the process of the Green Paper is going to be meaningful. And I submit that it cannot be meaningful if this bill, or what comes of it, is going to be pushed through before the Green Paper process, and preferably the White Paper process, is concluded. If one is looking at an humane and efficient migrant system, one needs to do things in order. And this cart is very far ahead of the horses. Again, I refer to the Organization of African Unity Convention, which articulates there is a need for an essentially humanitarian approach towards refugees. We are concerned that this is not happening with this bill being bulleted through. And Chairperson, the Refugees Act, again, is an outstanding act. The only problem with it has been implementation, for reasons which have been articulated today. It should not need the extent of tinkering which is being proposed. It is an excellent act. Implementation has been the problem. Since 2001, the issue has been the length of time of adjudication. And, of course, the issues referred to by Mr. McKay about delays in appeals and reviews. But there is a real problem about delay and standard of adjudication by refugee status determination officers. There would be no need for this attempt to revise the Act had there been well-qualified RSDOs who effectively have the power of life and death over asylum seekers. If there had been a higher standard than matric required, if there had been proper acceptance of training by the UNHCR, compliance with the fundamental principles of administrative law, and the knowledge by an asylum seeker that this is not a free pass to South Africa. You would be adjudicated swiftly and fairly. These problems, especially the problems of corruption, would have been reduced immeasurably. On the bill itself, Chairperson, under definitions, I urge the department to retain the member of the immediate family part of the definition of a dependent. We have numerous heart-rending examples of younger siblings coming who to join a refugee. These people would not be catered for. Aged uncles and aunts and grandparents would not be catered for if the member of the immediate family provision is taken out. I've dealt with the exclusion from refugee status. Again, the new ones, which are rather, that's another issue that disconcerts us. There are some far harsher measures that have been introduced since all the stakeholders made submissions to the 2015 version of the bill, and that is disconcerting. But to say that someone is excluded who is a fugitive from justice in another country where the rule of law is upheld by a recognized judiciary, where in fact the person might be in danger of being executed because he or she is gay, is just unacceptable. The crimes outside the country of a non-political nature, again, you do not cease to be a refugee who should be protected against non-refoulement because of that. The crimes in the Republic and Schedule 2 to the Criminal Law Amendment Act, you do not cease to be a refugee. You then get punished. I have no problem with an asylum seeker or refugee being thrown into jail for theft or robbery. But you cannot say he or she ceases to be a refugee. Again, the apparent discretion of the minister to cease recognition of refugee status is unacceptable and unconstitutional. The Standing Committee powers, the Standing Committee which is present, has got an enormous backlog with respect through no fault of its own. It cannot be expected to determine individual conditions of work or study. This is a really retrograde position, and for it to have to determine people's financial viability and whether or not they are going to be able to work is going to create absolute havoc. It's going to bring the law and government into disrepute. It is unworkable, and it is counterproductive for South Africans. It is good that refugees and asylum seekers are as low a burden on the South African taxpayer as possible. You achieve this by not having to coop them up in camps and provide for them. You achieve this by allowing them to work and study and employ South Africans, or to pay rent in their spaza shop to poor South Africans who let out a room or two to them to do so. South Africans benefit from the low prices they are able to achieve. On crime prevention and integrity, again, obviously one wishes to eliminate corruption. Internationally and in our domestic law, psychometric tests and polygraphs are dangerous. They are not accepted in courts of law. It is wrong to do so. What one, and with respect, it's a grave insult to the Refugee Appeal Authority or Appeal Board and the Standing Committee, but one does not eliminate corruption by these strange measures. One eliminates corruption by having an efficient system of monitoring and supervision and reporting, which must be done. Again, Chair, I respectfully submit that the department must ensure that its budget is realistic. It is an enormous department. It cannot do its work properly if its budget is going to be cut to an extent that it cannot employ properly qualified people, that it cannot have officers able to respond to the needs of asylum seekers and refugees. The amendment about spouses and dependents, again, it's most unfair that this be done without a higher quality of RRO and interpreter and RSDO. I have had several people tell me they said they didn't have a spouse in their country of origin because they didn't know that South Africa would recognize customary unions. And that has caused enormous trouble. People who leave children at school think that they're going to somehow remain there and often fail to mention them. DNA tests have shown that they are parents. This provision as it stands, the purported amendment of Section 21, is not acceptable. One of the excellent, and there are some excellent suggestions, one of them is the amendment of Section 21A of the Principal Act, where it says anyone reasonably suspected to have a mental disability gets certain assistance. Similarly, the following section, 21B, any child of an asylum seeker and any person included as a dependent will have the same status as accorded to the asylum seeker. Excellent suggestion and provision. I associate myself with the previous criticism of the proposed section 22 about the withdrawal of an asylum seeker visa. And I'm afraid the subsection relating to work and sustaining and the reliance, the absolutely unrealistic reliance on the UNHCR with all its difficulties to provide social assistance must be given away. The detention of an asylum seeker, we've all seen the horrors of Lindela and the number of cases, successful cases, again burdening the taxpayer on unlawful detention. That must be scrutinised very closely. As far as the proposed 24 capital A of the Act is concerned, this about the Standing Committee reviewing decisions. This has been a major problem, and the Standing Committee has accepted it. And the gentleman who made the first presentation made an interesting suggestion that perhaps one should not be obsessed by the distinction between manifestly unfounded and unfounded. It's a difficult issue anyway, but there has been a distinction in the right to appeal or make submissions to the Standing Committee from the right to make submissions to the Refugee Appeal Board. In a decision where the RSDO has said a matter is merely unfounded, it's quite clearly set out you have 30 days within which to appeal. The submissions to the Standing Committee have to be done within 14 days, despite the fact that the Standing Committee, through its own fault, will not get to the matter for 2.5 to 10 years, is very difficult to read and understand and is not explained. Numerous people come and say, we got told this, we're manifestly unfounded, and we were told that it was being referred to the Standing Committee, and they get a lengthy period, 6 months or 8 months or 9 months, before they have to come back. And they think that's it. They do not get advised that they have the right to make submissions. And submissions are generally not made. Again, RSDOs have made... There was a rash of decisions over the last year to the discomfiture of the Standing Committee, where RSDOs said, you say you come from Somalia, you say there are bombs going off in Mogadishu all the time. You live there to the age of 21, therefore I find that your application is fraudulent, not unfounded. And there were hundreds of those matters. The standard is low. And it's very important that there be an understandable process for appealing or making submissions against a manifestly unfounded decision. Again, I think the period of 10 years is wrong within which one can apply for residence. And again, where someone has been in South Africa for 18 years and is still an asylum seeker, because as the chair will recall, the old officials at the RAB didn't have their contracts renewed while they had tens of thousands of part-heard appeals, and the victims of those have still not had their new appeals. The Refugee Appeal Board has not sat in Cape Town since very briefly in April this year. And it does not sit elsewhere. There is no quorum at present. People should get some kind of automatic rights or amnesty if they have been here for a particular number of years. And more especially in the case of people who had appeals which were either never heard or part heard and have since not taken place or been adjudicated. Removal and detention, again, one would hope that the spirit of the Freedom Charter hovers over that. Finally, Chairperson, we heard about ordinary South Africans. The great thing for ordinary South Africans now is that we are part of Africa. We are not a hermetically sealed racist enclave at the tip of the continent. We are part of Africa. We have duties towards Africans in distress. And as such, we have a duty to comply with the Organization of African Unity Convention, with the Geneva Convention, and with the international instruments by which we are bound, and from which we benefit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for a very passionate plea. And then we shall go according to the program.
Is that all right?
That says we shall be having tea for 20 minutes and then come back. I think the department will have to answer this question when they are coming back. Why should the refugee be treated in the
member of the white people.
So the there have been a number of distinct submissions dealing with that aspect. So convince us that we don't have to wait for the green paper when we come back. Thank you.
Yeah. I was thinking about, I wanted to make a presentation but it didn't allow me to. I want to ask questions for the material that
we have. I'll find the part.
I know what you're
saying.
I was going to give us a check.